Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
However you want to set this up, I know that one of your first experiences was when you were quite young, but
I was 10.
Yeah. That's your very first memory of something odd going on.
I'm pretty sure there were more before that, but because, you know, when you're younger, you don't pay attention to those things because your innocence is still in the forefront, you know, so you don't really pay attention. And I knew entirely from a very small child that my mother was different. She was always, she believed in God, but she was always like that. I don't go to an actual church, and I never really understood why till I got older, because she also believed in the esoteric and things like that, because she saw things and she couldn't really put an answer to it. But as I got older, I learned that because we are Cherokee Indian, and some of my relatives are full-blood Cherokee Indian, that we had a shaman in our family, and we've had very much an influence into the world you can't explain. I mean, I don't have any answers for that, biblical or worldly. I just don't, you know, so I just know what I see and what I believe, and that's how I've come to be an adult with the stories that I have, you know. So
as you grew up, did you hear your mom saying that she saw things, or was this kind of a recent something that came to light that you were like, oh, I didn't know that my mom was also having experiences?
Oh, no, I knew, because, well, I think the first time I ever really heard my mom talk about it, we had moved into this house. I think I was maybe, it was around eight. I would say I was eight or nine-ish. We did a lot of little moving because my dad, he was a farmer. He worked on a dairy farm, but it was the same one for most of my life. And we would always, like, if his job advanced and he got a better pay, of course, we would get into a better place, a bigger place. And as our family grew, of course, we would outgrow one and grow into another, you know, so we did a lot of little moves, but within the same 20 mile radius of where I grew up. So anyway, to make that story shorter, we moved into this place that was originally built out of cinder blocks, and it was a very simple place. I come to find out later in life that it was actually intended for butchering cattle way back when.
Yikes.
It was a slaughterhouse. And I remember myself when we lived there, we had this couch that was in our dining room, and I had fallen asleep on the couch one night, and I woke up because it was a very small place, and it was oddly, like, the way they laid it out afterwards to make it into a home was very odd, because it was just a, you know, can think of like just a really big cement room. And so, like, you try to make a house out of that, it's like a little maze kind of, it's weird. And so that's why we had a couch in the dining room. But anyway, so I wake up in the middle of the night and I see this. There's a window kind of above where I was laying. And in this window, it's got a lot of cobwebs between the panels, the glass panes. And so you can't really see through it much. I mean, you could tell if there was light coming through, but you're not going to see if someone's on the other side. So I knew for a fact that what I was seeing was actually in the room with me. And I was terrified. So what I saw was a black shadow that stayed on the wall, along the wall, and followed the walls of the house. I watched it until it came back around to the kitchen that was behind me. And as it came back around, I bolted into my mother's room to see that she had fallen asleep with a cigarette in her hand. If I hadn't have gotten up, whatever that was, hadn't have woke me up, we might have died.
And this was in the shape of a person or just a black mass?
It was just, I don't really know, honestly. I just remember it being kind of tall-like-ish, and there was no definitive real shape to it. It just was there. I couldn't explain it. And also the same night, of course, my dad worked, I would say, the graveyard shift. He would go to work really early sometimes and be at work for like what seemed like 24 hours. Sometimes we would take him his lunch in the middle of the night, and it was at least, it was a good 20 minutes, 20 miles at least from where we lived to take it to him. And so this particular night, after I woke her up, she said, well, I'm glad you woke me up. We're going to take your dad his lunch. And it was like going to be 2 a.m. like by the time we would leave. And so she was in the kitchen and I started off to the bathroom. And if you think it's only girls in the house, right? And my dad's been at work all this time, so somebody had to have used the bathroom. I mean, one of us obviously used the bathroom since he'd been gone. There's no way we couldn't have. Yet the toilet seat was up and there was odd writing on the mirror in the bathroom with lipstick. However, my mom, I called her in there and I was like, oh my gosh, did you do this? And she's like, what do you mean? Did you do this? Did you do this? You know, it was kind of an argument back and forth, like who did what? So finally she just shut up about it, didn't say anything to me. And I was dumbfounded by just looking at her like, come on, you tried to scare me. You put lipstick on the window. You know, I'd grown up knowing about the quote, Bloody Mary stories, you know, the whole voodoo things in the mirror and all this stuff, you know, and I was scared of the mirrors. Why would I go to the mirror in the night? I'm not doing it. You know, so we left. And when we came back, of course, all that stuff was back to normal. My mom could not explain it.
Well, Sarah, what kind of writing? Do you recall what it looked like?
It was like Scrabble. Like, it looked like a five-year-old had gotten a hold of lipstick and just drawn on a mirror, just wrote. I don't remember what was written. I just remember it was there and the lipstick was red. And my mom didn't wear red lipstick, you know.
Oh, that's even weirder. So you don't even know where the lipstick really should have come from.
I don't know where it came from, no. I do remember that after that, my mom had this friend that had this friend that was like the type of person that would get rid of bad stuff, knew how to cleanse and that sort of stuff. And he came and did some sort of stuff. And then one of my really good friends that I went to school with, her mom was also into the esoteric type stuff and believed in this kind of thing. And she was very intuitive, like to the point to where we brought her. My mom said, I really need you to come to my house. And she said, I don't want to go. And she said, I need you to. I really need a cleansing, I think. And I need for you to tell me. We pulled up and this lady, her name was Helen. She did not even get out of the car. And she told my mother right then, we need to leave and you need to move and don't go back. And we did. We moved. We were out of there within a couple of weeks. Yeah.
And what did your dad say about all that?
Well, he's my stepdad. And so he's originally from Mexico. And they see there's things over there, tales of different creatures from over there that they, you know, he believes in. I mean, he tells some pretty chilling stories about himself when he was a kid as well. So I'm sure, you know, being that he wasn't home all the time, he didn't really see it for himself, but I know that he knew it was there. I mean, we'd seen things too, like we would have people over to watch movies and the TV would come on, we'd have it on, and it would just go from, you know, you're watching a VHS, all of a sudden you're watching a static TV and you would hear voices in the static. You would unhook it, rehook it, try it on a different TV, and no matter what, you still get the voices in the static, and it's just like, you know, what do you do? I mean, we just knew something was up, and I didn't learn until a little while after we'd moved that the woman that lived there before us, that we had actually known, that when we first moved in, my mom found some witchcraft books in the closet by the front door. And the lady that I mentioned, named Helen, told her, well, you need to burn those books. Burn them out away from your property, so whatever you're releasing leaves your property. And we did that, and I think whatever was there, just it aggravated it. I mean, because that, about after we burned the books, is about when all the things, I'm talking even kittens that got ran over by accident, came back. I'm talking about horses next door scratched up by their neck way up high. How? There's so much from there that I can't explain.
Sarah, you said kittens that got ran over came back. What do you mean?
Yeah, we had a stray cat that had kittens up underneath our car, of all places. And my mom, some were in the fan and some were under the car. And my mom, we went to leave to take my dad lunch one night as well, same time of the night, always around what they call the witching hour, you know. We go to leave and she heard and we felt the bump, you know. She gets out and there it was. She had hit it. And so she picked it up. And she took it across the county road where we lived and put it by the fence because we didn't have time and she didn't know what to do. And when we came back, this kitten was clearly gone. I mean, it was smashed. There was no, I cried, I remember, there was no way that kitten could have survived that. We came back and the kitten was at the front door. My mom looked at me and she was like, there's no way. I don't understand. She just kept asking. I don't understand.
That may be one of the most unique things I've ever heard anybody say in any
That's
of my
not
interviews.
The first time I've experienced that with a kitten, though.
Really?
No.
Do tell.
Because
do,
I knew
if you've got more
I knew
of that.
A kid in my neighborhood, I think I was like 13, 12 maybe, that was that way. He was mean. He was hateful. And he tortured animals, and I had a kitten and he tortured it. He actually killed it, and we had storage units behind our house, and he threw it up against the storage unit, and I heard it hit, bam, I knew that it was gone. And the kitten showed up. It was at my back fence the next day. Same exact kitten.
And this is at that old slaughterhouse location?
No, this was a different location.
Wow.
This was like years later, different location. Because see, we lived at the slaughterhouse, I think I was eight, around eight, and we had moved. We didn't last two more weeks after Helen told us to leave. We moved from there, and by the time I was 12, we lived on the opposite side of town, and this house was a nice older house, in a nice community, you know, just a quiet, good neighborhood. Never really saw anything or heard much from that neighborhood at all. It was very peaceful. I mean, I had strange neighbors you heard strange things from kids and other people in the neighborhood about strange neighbors, but nobody ever bothered us.
What were the rumors about the neighbors?
Oh, Lordy. We had this Hispanic lady that lived across the street. And she always told me, she would tell me, mija, you know, don't go over there. That lady's a bruja. And I was like, you know, that was like, girl, don't go there. The lady is a witch. And I just didn't believe what she was telling me, you know. And she told me, she said, you don't ever look her in the eyes because she can put a spell on you. And I really thought she was crazy. I just didn't believe her, right? So I happened to be riding my bicycle by over here, just the same house, and it was like a block from, so I went around the block, come up, and I did it again, you know. And one day I looked over there, and I saw these candles sitting in the window. And this candle was red, but didn't, it was not, I don't know how to explain it to you, the difference between blood and paint. I mean, if you can imagine. And it was full of that. And I went back and I told the lady, her name was Doña Maria, what I had seen. And she said, I told you not to go over there. I told you not to mess with her. She's a witch. And I said, what is that? And she said, well, we're not going to talk about that, but that's why I told you not to go over there. So she knew, I didn't know, you know, but it's just strange. I mean, there was lots of strange, you know, things in my life. I've seen a lot of strange things over the years.
Let's talk about, by the way, seriously, that kitten story, I've never heard anything like that before. Creepy. That is creepy and incredible.
My mom always said, well, they have 9 lives. That's what she would tell me. They have 9 lives.
That is true. Mom is right. Oh, my goodness gracious. I mean,
but who really believed that? You know what I mean? You right. always think, well, a cat has 9 lives. You know, it's just luck or what they call luck, you know? Now, so that would be like a non-life.
Like specifically, I know there was a litter of kittens, but specifically that first kitten that she physically ran over, picked up, you know, took across the road.
It was orange. It was orange. It was an orange kitten, and they were probably about, I don't know, 7 or 8 weeks by now. It was big enough to be like not attached to mama and that. Yeah.
And did you guys, you know, keep them outside? Were they kind of feral in a way and you just fed them?
Yes.
Or okay.
Yes.
So after this thing comes back and you all are kind of going, okay, then this is very strange. Was the cat around for, you know, until you guys left, and then when you moved, you don't
it
know what
was
happened
around.
To
him? Like, wow. You couldn't touch them. They were not very friendly cats.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other kittens pretty well scattered into the woods. This kitten would stay across the street, like where my mom took it and left it. It kind of stayed over in that vicinity, but it would come up, sneak up to eat, and then if you would try to get close to it, it would run, and that's where it would always go. Yeah. That's where it stayed.
9 lives indeed. What a cool story that is. Incredibly creepy, though. You're right.
Yes.
Well, Sarah, did you want to tell me this story about your great-grandmother?
She was such a wonderful woman, you know. I never really believed anything would ever be, I guess you'd call it scary, creepy, eerie. In the way of her, she didn't have that kind of personality, you know. Her family is the Native American family, all from like Arkansas, Oklahoma. She migrated to Texas when she was younger, and her and my grandfather married when they were very young in East Texas. And I've lived with her mostly my entire life. I was spoiled by them, because my mother was really young when she had me. And so they felt like it was their responsibility, I guess, in a way, to raise me and do right by me. And so I was staying with them most of the time, and she got sick with dementia. Okay. And so she passes away, and I was about 10 years old, because I was in the 5th grade. And this was in the fall of 94. And so my birthday is also the week that she passed away, and Thanksgiving as well. So I remember very well, I was in the bathtub getting ready to do my thing for the night. So I go to school the next morning, and I called her Mimi. Okay, so Mimi, I was at my mother's house this night, particular night, for whatever reason. I want to say it was I was thinking it was the night before Thanksgiving, but I think it was after already. It was going to be like my first day back to school or something. But anyway, so I'm getting into the shower, and my stepdad comes running into the bathroom unannounced and just like, get your clothes on, we have to go. Get your clothes on, we have to go. And I was like, what are you talking about? your Mimi, she died. Get your clothes on. And I'm thinking, you're lying to me. Don't lie to me. You know, I did not believe, I was in shock and didn't believe it. Well, a police officer that my family knew very well had come and picked my mother up and took her over there. And so I knew when I came out of the bathroom and my mom was gone that it something was wrong. So we get across town. By this time, the coroner had already taken her, and I still didn't believe. So I had to go all the way back into her room. And of course, all the lights were on and she wasn't there. And that's where it all began. Like, I, being in shock because I was so close to her and her husband, it just was really hard for me to adjust. Like, I cried myself to sleep that night so hard. My mom ended up sleeping with me in my bed. She and I were the closest to this woman. And we fell asleep that way in each other's arms. And I woke up in the middle of the night with this glow at the foot of my bed, just kind of standing in a corner of my room. My room is really small. And I see this glow and I can smell this very faint, like wildflowers, like being in a field of fresh, fragrant wildflowers. It was very sweet. And the glow had a pinkish tint to it. And she was just as beautiful, like I would say maybe like 20 years old-ish. She was really young. Hair was beautiful. It wasn't gray. She didn't have wrinkly skin. You know, she wasn't wearing glasses. She was just like her normal, what she would have been, young, youthful self. And she was speaking to me, and she's just like, come on, babe. She called me Baby Sarah because my grandmother's name was Sarah. And she called me Baby Sarah. Her and my granny Sarah called me that. They were really the only two that called me that the most. If we were in a big family setting, some other people might call me that to address who they were speaking to, but mostly it's just them two. And so she told me that. She was like, Baby Sarah, come on. She was like looking at a pocket watch. And she's like, I don't have much time and we've got to go. Come go with me. And I'm picking out like the little boy and Macaulay Culkin and the blankets at Home Alone, like scared to death, you know, like, I don't want to see you. And if I cover up, you're really not there. So I covered my face and then I uncovered my face and damn it, it was still there. And I was like, no, like, it's not real. It's not still there, you know. But it was still there. And eventually, I don't know how long, because I don't know what time it was. It seemed like it took forever. But she eventually went away and I could not sleep. And when my mom, I woke her up that next morning, I was like frantically telling her the story. And at first she acted like she didn't believe me. But then I think she knew that I wasn't lying, because I mean, how could you make it up? How could a 10-year-old know how to make up a story like this? You know, I couldn't just, I'd never really seen pictures of her when she was that young. And I didn't watch movies like that, you know, so how could I explain that to somebody, you know? And the older I got, the more my mom was like, well, I'm quite sure you did see her. I mean, she had unfinished business, I believe that. And she came for you. You were her baby. But I always felt like if I had gone with her, I would have died. I mean, that would have been, she would have taken me. And she would have taken me because she was a very spiritual person. And I think that that would have been her way of taking an innocent child from the evils of the world, you know, and keeping them innocent. And that's, she always tried to keep me innocent, you know.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I had a question about the wildflowers, and it was a two-part, but you kind of answered part of it already with saying that you feel like she actually wanted to take you with her, which, you know, isn't maybe the most pleasant thought. I mean, you know, the cat, the cat's only doing what the cat does to the mouse, but the mouse thinks that the cat is evil, right? So it's kind of that situation. It's only doing what it does. And if she thought that was best, then that's what she thought was best. But so it's pertained to the wildflower smell. Is there a tie-in, and I'll ask my second part anyway, even though you already said that thing, which kind of is null to this point, but do you think, is that a way for her to make you more calm during that experience, or is there a straight tie-in with the whole wildflowers smell that you experienced?
And you know, so I questioned that too. My whole life I've thought about that. She had the greenest of green thumbs of anybody I'd ever met. I mean, random strangers would stop on the side of the road and be like, oh my gosh, can I have a cutting of X, Y, or Z? Because she had one of everything that could ever have been grown anywhere. And so I thought part of me was like, well, is that just, you know, when they say like, well, if you really think about it and you pay attention, you can pick up on the signs that people from the other side leave you, or you'll see something that's out of place and you know that they've been there. And I thought, well, maybe that was her way of like letting me know that it was really her. And then part of me being, I'm a Southern Baptist, and what I believe honestly in my soul as a Christian is that those things that you see are, well, you've always been taught anyway, those things that you see are the devil shape-shifting to make you believe that it's something that you want so desperately to believe in, but it's really them just trying to play tricks, right? And so part of me is torn thinking, was it a trick or was it really her? And because I loved her so much and still miss her to this day, like as if it were yesterday, I just can't shake the feeling that it was really her. I mean, because I just can't explain so much of that, you know. And then even today, if I walk somewhere, say I walk by a bush and it smells fragrant, it takes me right back to being 10 years old. I mean, is that her way of keeping me informed that she's with me always? Or is that just the figment of my imagination, you know?
Right. No, because that's a really interesting part. Not that it's not interesting enough to see your great-grandmother very young and standing there and wanting you to come with her, but the whole, the wildflowers thing. Right. But you really,
I was scared. I cherish that now.
But you knew right away, like, I can't go with you because it's not going to be good for me. Like, I won't be able to stay here.
Well, I was terrified. I mean, come on, you're seeing a ghost. Of lack of better words, you are seeing a ghost. You're 10 years old. And 10-year-olds usually are, what, afraid of the dark, crackling noises of an old house, scared the tar out of them. I mean, there's just so much that a child, because of their innocence, they are going to be afraid. They've not been exposed and they don't have enough underneath their belt, per se, to like desensitize them of all these things. And so naturally I was scared.
But did you really feel, even during the experience, probably looking back, it's easier to start to think like, oh, well, maybe she wanted me to take her with her and I wouldn't be here anymore. But did you kind of realize like right away? I mean, obviously you were scared and it's not fun to see a ghost no matter who it is or where you're seeing them. But did you know right away that that's what she wanted to do?
I don't feel, I guess a better way of explaining it now is I don't feel a negative way about it now. Thinking about how things transpired then, I don't feel like she was trying to do things in a bad way. She wasn't trying to harm me. That would never have been her intention. And so, I've had this toss up in my soul about, well, if it was the devil, then their intention was that, you know, and if it wasn't, then her intention was just that she loved me so much and she didn't want to leave me.
Right.
She took me everywhere. I mean, when they went on vacation, I went. When she went to the doctor, I went. I mean, even if it meant coming to pick me up from school early, I went. I was her everything. So that to me is, was her way still of making sure that I was included because I was her everything.
Last question, at least I think it is for this story, is, sorry. What do you think the purpose of, or maybe she couldn't help it, but what do you think the purpose of her appearing to you younger versus how you would know her?
Well, you know, I've read a lot over my adult years about this sort of thing, just trying to understand it myself. And a lot of what you read and a lot of what we're taught is that a lot of times they revert back to a very innocent time in their life. You hear, you know, people that pass, even that are like war soldiers, you'll see them in their period dress, you know, what they wore to war or whatever that might have been, you know. And I just figure she appeared to me younger because she always wanted to be youthful. She wore, let me tell you, that woman wore what she called rouge. She wore cold cream. And every night I'd smell it. I remember, like, I would, when I stayed with him one night, I would, he would sleep with me to get me to sleep. And then I would sleep with her. And then back and forth. That was my way of sharing, you know. And when I'd sleep with her, it always smelled like face cream. And I'd wake up smelling face cream. And she always had her makeup on, whether we went anywhere or not, you know. And so she always wanted to be youthful. And she complained about her baggy skin. So, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I just thought, well, she just was where she wanted to be. She was youthful. Her voice was still the same. The tone of her voice, everything. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind.
That's a very cool story. The visitation stuff I find extremely interesting.
You know, but the older that I've gotten and the other experiences that I've had, that's not the top of my list of interesting things. I mean, it's very personal. That's the most personal story that I have. But that's not the most interesting. And to me, that you find that to be so interesting, I mean, that's just surprising to me, you know? I guess because I'm used to it.
Yeah, I think seeing my great-grandmother in that fashion and her speaking to me and wanting me to go with her would be a little interesting. Yeah, it would.
She was 84 when she passed away, and I had her husband with me till he was 92. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned other more interesting experiences. Are those coming up, or should we interject that now, or did you want to go on to that the cryptid stuff? It's up to you.
It's however you want to, whatever you want to do.
Okay. Well, since we're on the subject, let's hit on one of those other, what you call the more interesting experiences.
So I've had a couple of different, I would say this one was about 8 or so years ago. I'm going to try to shorten it. So there was a story that hit the news about Devlin, Texas, having a UFO experience. And I grew up about 7 miles from where that took place. So it was no shock to me when that came out, because there's all kinds of interesting things from this area that have been, you know, not just talked about in the history classes in school. Hey, you know, well, have you visited this place or that place? Something like McDowell's Hole, if you ever want to look into that. They taught about that in history class in 7th grade, you know. And so when you go check that out and see it for yourself, if you experience things for yourself, you know for it to be true. And I'm a scientific type of person. Like, you're going to tell me it, I'm going to try to debunk it. I'm going to try to go and figure it out. Is it really there or is it not? I don't just go off of your word. And so I was going out to most of my friends are like 10 or more older than me, years older than me. I was going out to an older friend's house one night. It was kind of late. And we were stopping to get pizza, me and my kids, on our way out there. And so she calls me. I had just left Domino's Pizza, where I grew up. And I had just had an experience where a guy in the parking lot and myself looked up and there were strobing lights over us. And we were just like, I was like, oh my God, oh my, that I was telling my kids, stay in the car. You know, I was freaked out. And this guy was like pointing up and I'm pointing up and we're both, and then it was just gone. There was no explanation where it came from. It just lifted, gone. And I'm in shock. Yet I'm getting into my SUV and I'm going to drive out to my friend's house. It's like 15 miles out in the country. She calls me before I ever really left town. And she's like, where are you? Where are you? And I'm like, I'm coming. And she said, where are you right now? And I said, well, I'm passing DJ's convenience store. What's wrong? And she's like, can you see towards my direction? And I'm like, yeah, well, can you? And there's on the other side of her house, I don't really know how far it is, but there's like these wind turbines that they're putting up everywhere. There's a whole farm of them out there. And you can see in the night, red flashing lights for like miles. It's crazy how many there are. And she asked me, could I see them from where I was? I was like, well, I can't see it yet, but why? What's going on? You got to hurry up. Just get here. Hurry up. She's like, there's something hovering over those red flashing lights, and the lights are not flashing while it's hovering. It's weird. You hurry up. So I'm flying down the road, and as I pull up to her place, I'm noticing that I see it for myself. There is a dark, I don't know what, hovering over these windmills or wind turbines, whatever you want to call them. And the lights at night that flash red were not flashing. And as it would move, it would hop from one to one to one, the lights would go back flashing. And she's like, I think it's a UFO. And I said, nah, you know, because like I'd never seen any of that really for myself. And I told her about what happened. And I don't know. She said, yeah, it's like I'm watching as it's hopping from one to one. And I'm like, it's happening so fast. I wondered, could it be the same that I just saw? Like, you know, and I heard later on, you know, different stories in the media and whatever later on that they can use these type of things to get energy. And I have questioned myself, were we really seeing what we saw, or was it what was it? I don't know. I've never seen that again. Never, not ever. There's been other stories in our area, people seeing crazy things like that, but I'd never seen it before, never seen it after. Don't know if I want to. You know, because if it's something that I can't really explain at all, that's the kind of thing that creeps me out, you know.
And what time was that all going on?
I would say, well, we went to Domino's. I want to say it was like 9. We were going to be there late at my friend's house. I knew that. We were probably going to spend the night and hang out, you know. And this was like, by the time I got to her house, it was probably like 9:45, 10 o'clock-ish. It was getting pretty late. I mean, it was pitch dark. There's no light out there. Like I said, it's about 15 miles out off of 108 near Stephenville, Texas. So it's a good distance.
Any
town, there's no lights.
Any Air Force bases out that way?
Well, you have Dyess that is in Abilene, which is about a little less than an hour and a half from here. You have some ones in Fort Worth, which is about 45 minutes to an hour from here. Lackland is in San Antonio. It's about 4 hours. Texas is full of them. I mean, they're all over the place. So we're surrounded. I mean, plus you have the Army. Fort Hood is like 2 hours maybe. I mean, so there's a lot of activity. There's planes fly over here all the time, like military choppers, Black Hawks, all kinds of, I mean, I wouldn't say like every single day, but often enough that we are very desensitized from that sort of stuff. So.
Now, you called it a dark something over the turbines. How big was it, would you say?
Big, miles. If I was directly under it and we weren't, it was at a distance, but it would probably be like a mile, 2 miles. Like, I mean, it was big.
Wow.
Really big. Yes. Mm.
Yeah, that changes things a little bit. You can't really call that a helicopter.
The place was that way.
Really?
What now?
I was just saying that you can't really classify that as some kind of a weird helicopter sighting or something. You know, you've got something that size. So when you're looking at the one above you at the Dominoes, I mean, that must have just, you know, I don't know if you could see stars out there, but I'm assuming it blocked out everything without the lights. I know it was lighted, but
like in town, because we have a university here with big stadium and stuff. And it was in the warmer months. So I would say, you know, you would be able to see the lights, maybe some stars, depending on where you are in town, you know, but town of about 17,000 and 20,000, you would probably see some, not a lot, you know, but if you saw something in the sky that was dark with strobing lights, that you don't, I mean, we don't see like a 747 at night or whatever. It would be like way the heck up there, a tiny little flash, you know, because DFW airport is a couple of hours from here, maybe like an hour and a half or so, 2 hours, you know? So, I mean, it wouldn't be flying low enough. And a helicopter, if we had one coming to the hospital, which comes pretty often and flies to Dallas, you know, and whatnot, but you still know the difference, the movement, the pattern, the lights, it's all different.
Oh yeah, no, it definitely wasn't a helicopter. That's what I'm saying. That was something completely, completely different, especially at that size. And obviously you didn't mention it, but I'm assuming probably no sound, right?
No, no sound. It was still as it could be. I mean, I don't even remember hearing traffic, and that is a highly trafficked road that I was on. And I don't even remember hearing traffic.
That's another weird thing that came up in the last talk is, you know, when he got down that street, or when he and his friends got down that street, it was like this kind of cone of silence area. You hear that a lot. You hear it in the woods and you hear it in cities. So kind of strange. Well, Sarah, where are we going to go next?
Chupacabras.
That sounds good to me.
We live out in the country. We live about 22 miles from that city that I mentioned before. This little community that my husband grew up in. And within, I would say, a 20-mile radius of where we live is at least a small town. One is a little less. It's about 12-ish miles from us. And then about 20 miles is another big city. And then the big interstate that runs through I-20 is, you know, that's not far. And so my husband talked one time when we first met and we're dating about this strange dog figure he saw in the middle of the night cross his path when he was driving between here and that town that's about 12 miles away. And at first I didn't believe him. Not that I didn't believe him, but it was kind of like this, well, I've never seen that and I've heard of that, but no, you know. We were, you know, a couple years later coming back from the town that I grew up in, which is like 22 miles away and in the opposite direction. And we were on Highway 8 coming back home, and this was in broad daylight, but in the afternoon, like kind of in the evening-ish, sun going down, but there's still light. And out of my peripheral, I see a critter coming. He sees it, and we're out. It was so fast, I was just like, what was that? You know, like, did we just see, like, what was that? And I can't even, like, I don't know how to explain what it looked like. No hair, kind of shaggy, just different, hunched over, odd looking creature. I've never seen this kind of an animal before. Just here one minute, gone the next. And he saw one. He was headed from our house towards I-20 on a project for work. And he drove down the road. He saw one cross his path too. And he called me and he was like, guess what I saw, you know? I couldn't believe it. So all within a 15-mile radius at the most of our house, there have been 3 sightings, all by the same person, no less. So that's kind of, you know, telling. I mean, they exist. I believe that they exist. No doubt in my mind.
So this thing's got a Great Dane face, and then you said bigger back legs than the front legs, which is really kind of weird. Would you have something to compare it to size-wise? If you could just take a normal dog, like what would that dog be?
Oh, gosh. Like a coyote, maybe. Great Danish, like, long, I don't know, long snout, just bony, Rhodesian Ridgeback, maybe, like, bony. I don't know. I can't. I mean, it's just different. It's just a big, longer bodied, oddly proportionate, bony tail, just different.
You seen that lady that's got the supposed stuffed one in her living room in Texas, actually?
Yes. Yes.
Something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And they say, oh, well, it's just a rare form of mange, you know. Okay, well, where's all the other animals that have rare forms of mange? I mean, why is it just a random dog every now and again? What about all the other wild feral dogs that run? Hogs. I mean, I've seen 300, 400, 500, 600 pound hogs that run amok and they're healthy as a lark. I mean, what's the deal? I mean, why is it just that one random dog that doesn't explain it to me?
Yeah, and they eat everything, those hogs, right? I mean, that's how they get that big.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
They eat anything, little garbage dumpsters. Well, and you know, you make a good point because it's not just, I mean, yes, maybe you could say mange, but then it also has these other strange characteristics like the bigger back legs and, you know, super bony, which could be something. But the Great Dane face and all of that, it's got unique characteristics about it.
The arch, even the arch of its back, I mean, the arch is like if you think about what a roller coaster would look like, you know, it just arches and the front legs are smaller. So it kind of is at a slope. It's just different. I mean, a back, very disproportionate.
A back like a hyena then, real hunched.
Yeah.
Hunched
back. Oh, yeah. There you go. Hyena is a very good way to describe it. There you go.
Cool sightings. And it is very strange that it goes over that time period, but it's a very small area there.
But very wooded, heavily wooded. I mean, it's a lot of mesquite trees, pecan trees. We have some oak, post oak. But very heavily wooded out here. There's a lot of like cotton farming, peanut farming, hay baling going on. I mean, it's just a rural community and you're going to see animals of all kinds. I mean, you see them all the time, but I've never seen, quote, a dog that looked like that before in my life. And I've seen the dogs with mange and it didn't look like that. And again, it was so fast too. You know, you still wonder, did I really see that?
Well, how many seconds do you think you saw it?
30, maybe less, 15, 20, maybe. I don't know. Short.
Still a cool sighting. I mean, really, honestly, no matter what it is, it's weird at the very least. I mean, you know, if people don't want it to be called a chupacabra, fine, pick another name. We don't honestly know what it is because we haven't scooped one up that looks exactly like that and said, here's what it is.
Yeah.
So it is a cryptid. I mean, at the very basis of a definition of a cryptid, right?
That's right.
Well,
go
yes,
for it. I'd rather it be you than me.
Right? You're like, out of all the things, I'm going to leave the chupacabra to somebody else. Do you want to talk about the woman in the SUV?
That's, you know, that's a hard one here because there's no explanation to how she got here. So I've been living with my now husband for like maybe a year when that happened. And being that we do live so far out, we live kind of on this straightaway, but close to a curve of what they would, you know, that this was a booming town back in the early times, and they had a school, functioning school. There's a school down on the corner and a guardrails on a small bridge that goes over a small creek. And so to set this story up, she hit everything from the start of that corner down there all all the way to our front yard. And the tree in our front yard, I don't know what kind of tree it is. I just know it grows like these long green things that like look like green beans. It's a cigar tree. He says it's like a cigar tree or something like that. And so anyway, she hits this tree. And this is like 11 o'clock at night. We'd been in town, he and I, and our daughters were asleep here. And the house is really small, so we moved in this like portable building and set it up as an apartment for our teenage daughters. And they were asleep in there. And this tree stopped this SUV from hitting their building within 12 feet or 15 feet, maybe. The startle woke them up. So they rush out. And my 18-year-old is like, oh my gosh, there's been an accident. So she's very medically savvy, and she wanted to be a doctor when she was in high school. And so that she rushes after this girl and starts trying to figure out, how can I get her out? How do I, you know, save her life, you know? Well, volunteer fire is right behind my house, and the chief or whatever, which is also the preacher of a church here, lives a couple of blocks away in our community. And he rushes over when they got wind of whatever happened. And they tried to save her. They finally get her out, and they take her up the road to where a straightaway is for airlift to be able to come and safely get her out. And by the time they get her, not even a mile down the road, an airlift landed, she died right there. That's where they call it, that she died. I believe she died before them, because the impact was ridiculous, girl. I mean, her pajamas inside out, glass everywhere. There was alcohol in the car, but it had never been opened. She didn't have alcohol in her system. She had, for whatever reason, had art supplies with her. We found paintbrushes and stuff. It was just everywhere. I mean, there were car parts flown so far. It was crazy. There's no way she would have survived. I don't believe. Like a year later, I happened to be home one day, and I get a knock at my door. Nobody ever comes to the front door because, well, our front, even though it's a front porch and that, people just don't come there. We most people that know us come to the back door, and we are male and all that. It's just, we don't deal with the front door. So somebody knocked at the front door, and I thought that was kind of strange, you know? So I peek my head out and see someone's there, and I creepily like open the door. Can I help you? You know? She said, I don't know you. You don't know me, but, you know, I know so-and-so that the accident happened here. Can we talk? And I just felt this great sense of like gratefulness that she came. And how did you know to come find me? You know, like maybe there would be closure to this girl. I wanted her to have, I don't feel like she had closure, you know, and I didn't have any, certainly. It did bother me from the time that the accident happened until, because my daughters could have died, you know, my second oldest that was in there as well, when she came out, all she could do was drop to her knees and cry because she saw this woman, how she was. I mean, you know, so it was traumatizing for everyone. And I was glad that the lady came. So her and her husband come, and she wanted to know what happened and me to give her a little bit of history and story. And she had told me that apparently, you know, the lady had been, this was a younger woman. She was in her 20s, and she had been down to the VFW. You know, of course, they have a bar, served food and stuff like that. And she'd been down there visiting. They were having a meal, and supposedly someone said that, you know, she was trying to, you know, pick from everybody's plate, and it was just, she was just being very erratic and unusual. And then her mother lived in a small town, you know, just about 8 miles from us, that didn't really have much of anything there anymore like it used to as well. So it's kind of, you know, a rural town. And She's not originally from there, but her mom somehow lived there, which is like 3 hours from where this girl lived. And she was here, just happened to be here that night visiting her mother, supposedly. Her and her mom was like, I'm leaving, going to so-and-so's house. I'd already had plans. And she was like, fine, I'll just go, you know, I'm going home. So she was headed back home this way and she crashed. There's no explanation. Still to this day, I have no idea what happened to that girl for her to crash. 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock. I mean, it really wasn't that late. Honestly, for somebody that might have, quote, been partying, I don't know. But if she'd been out doing that, it really wasn't that late for somebody that does that. And it wasn't so late that she should have been so exhausted she couldn't have driven. So I don't understand. And if they didn't find anything in her system, what was it? I feel like, you know, I told my husband too, after that, I'd seen a couple of times, I'd seen something in this house out of my peripheral going down the hall. You know, I wasn't sure who or what, but I know that I'd seen it. I did my own spiritual consulting, trying to figure this out. You know, I still don't really have a full answer as to what. I felt like maybe it was her, because I think she was at an unrest, like with no closure. And so when I spoke to the lady that came and she told me the stories and where she came from, where she lived, I still couldn't understand why way over here. I can't put the puzzle together. It doesn't fit, you know. She said she was going to the vehicle, that the wrecking yard still a year later had the vehicle, and she was going to go and retrieve some things from the vehicle because the family didn't do anything. They didn't claim the body. They didn't pick up the vehicle. They didn't do anything. This girl that came to my house was only like her best friend. And she did all of that. And she said that, of course, it was so bad. They cremated her and that, and she was going to take care of all of that. And she's like, you know, I had to do everything. She said nobody, of course, she didn't have any savings, no life insurance, nothing like that. So nothing took care of it. So the state took care of. It's just a very strange story.
That is so sad. The family didn't even want to claim her body.
Well, I don't know if there was very many people that could have. I just know that her mother lived here. I don't know about any siblings, a husband, or no dad, no, she didn't have any kids, nobody. So, I mean, who does when you have nobody?
That is highly unusual. They didn't find anything in her system. And as you mentioned, and here's the thing, if she had fallen asleep, you said that she hit everything on the way down before she even hit the tree.
Everything.
So if she was asleep, the very first thing that you hit, you know, you're going to jolt awake and, you know, maybe you make it out of an overcorrection if you do it or not. I just, that's very strange circumstances. And then obviously that's a very large tree in your front yard that saved your girls.
Large.
On that
it
evening.
It survived.
Yeah, it did.
It grew a greener, it grew better after, it was weird, grew better afterwards, I guess. It survived. The highway patrol even told the lady that showed up at my place, I forget her name, told her that it looked to them when they did their investigation like she hit everything from at least a half a mile all the way down. And that's like the turnoff to go from here to the little town where her mother lived. So from there to my house, she hit like everything on the side of the road. And there's some pretty deep culverts in there that I would have figured would have derailed her before now. Why my yard?
Yeah, it just seems like she had some kind of a stroke or a heart attack, or I don't know. I mean, how do you just hit all that stuff and you don't try to correct the situation? It just seems like she was cruising the way she was cruising, and the tree just happened to be there.
Even from that, like pajamas inside out, you're going in public, but you're wearing your pajama pants inside out and a tank top. And like, I mean, I see people wearing pajama pants and tank tops in Walmart, for crying out loud. Yeah. But you've got it inside out and you're going to a dinner at a VFW. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Sounds like some mental issues going on. That doesn't really explain the crash, but just, you know, I suppose you probably thank that tree every day.
I do, because my daughters are alive because it was there. It could have been a very bad situation for us. I mean, bad emotionally, I mean, because we had to endure that too, but I am grateful. And I pray for her soul every day because I don't know what happened.
And also, you mentioned in your email that about your papa, you know, and your whole spirit guide situation.
You know, that was my Mimi's husband, you know, and he passed away in 2001, the early part in January. And I remember laying one day with my kids. They were like 1 and 2. We were watching cartoons in the living room and laying on a beanbag on the floor, and we all fell asleep, right? And I wake up because he woke me up and he asked me, where is my, he wanted to know where his cowboy boots were and his felt hat and all of these things. He was asking me, where is this stuff at? He was like, because this goes to you and this goes to so-and-so. And I'm just in shock. I didn't see him. I could hear him. He was whispering it to me in my ear. I couldn't go back to sleep. I was awake. And I called his daughter, Sarah. I called my granny. And I asked her, where is this and where is that? And she wanted to know where this was coming from. Why am I asking? And I told her my story. And she don't believe in this kind of stuff. She denies it. She's Church of Christ. She's going to deny it. And she was like, kind of like, you're crazy, Zorda, you know. And funeral came, it was like later that week. Of course, I figured out where all this stuff went, and I have a boot today. I use it for flower arrangements, you know, put flowers in it and decorated it up, but I have it today. It means everything to me, and I still see him. I've seen him in this house. He's one of the tall, lengthy figures that walks. I do believe he is a spirit guide for me. He watches over me. I know that he does. Too many things. I've had things that I know I put somewhere going missing. I've had things. I've seen other things, you know, but I've been in the bathroom. Here it's just me and my husband now. My kids are so big, they're gone, and it's just me and him. And if I'm in the bathroom, I don't close the door anymore. I'm just to that point. And I'll see it go down the hall, or, you know, like it lives here. I don't see it often, but when I do, it doesn't bother me because I know that it's him.
Does he still talk to you at all?
No. I mean, he probably would if I would get out a pendulum or something and ask the questions, but I don't entertain that very much. So he doesn't come to me like he did that day.
And when you see, like, if you're in the bathroom and you see something, is it like a shadow figure, or what does it look like?
Oh yeah. It's tall and dark. It's not transparent. It's dark, but it looks like it would be him, tall and skinny. It just looks like it would be him.
Does your husband see him?
I don't get a worry or fear. He doesn't see it. He doesn't see it.
What does he think about all this stuff?
He wishes that he would. He's like, you know, part of me is just like, he believes that stuff exists, but until he sees it, like, you know, like seeing is believing, I guess. I mean, that's about the best way I can explain it, you know, because he saw the dog or whatever that was. You know, he's seen it 3 times. So now he believes for sure that it exists because he's seen it. You know, if something were to approach him, he says he wouldn't be scared or anything. But until it does, or until he sees it for his own 2 eyes, he can only just believe what someone else says, you know. So it doesn't scare him, at least.
Well, I know that that's the end of the list that you sent me through your email, but were there other encounters or anything that you wanted to share?
Trying to think, I've had so much over my life, man. It's just been crazy. I mean, I've dealt with some in my life, you know, things that I couldn't explain. So like my grandfather in my house, I also saw him in a house that my grandmother, and then when they moved to Stephenville, I was just before I was born, but I was very young when I remember where they lived. And the house that they had originally sat on a different property in town, and they moved it to where it's at today, and it was an empty shell, and they remodeled, they did everything. Okay, so this house is a two-story Victorian with like 7 bedrooms. It's crazy big, and it sits in the middle of this town. And I lived there off and on. I stayed there a lot. I spent a lot of time there as a child. And as an adult, my mother and my stepfather were purchasing the house, I would say about 10, 12 years ago. And maybe it was about 15 years ago when they moved in. And about 10, 12 years ago, I went through a divorce and had my kids were small. And we moved back to Texas from Wyoming. And we stayed there with them until I got my place and got on my feet and whatnot. So long story short, one night I was sitting there, and I was pregnant at the time. I was sitting there looking out a living room. So there were 3 different big, like, there was a formal living, a dining room, and a den where you watch TV. And all these rooms were connected through doorways into a foyer that had the stairs that went up to the second floor. You could look out 2 triangular windows and a front door out of that foyer and into all these other rooms. So I'm sitting there looking out the formal living room that faced the street. It was by the front door, and I'm looking into that foyer, and it is darker than a bat's behind, and it is probably around 11 midnight-ish. My mom got off late from work, and I thought, I'll just stay up and visit, and I'll go to bed. I'm looking out that doorway during a conversation, and I see this black, tall shadow just whisk itself up the stairs. No sound, no nothing. And I turned and looked at my mom, and my mom was turning to look at me, and we both look at the door and look at each other. And then she says, "Did you see that?" And I said, "See what?" And she looked at me, and she's just like, "I know you saw it." And I said, "Yeah, what was it?" And she was like, "That was your papa." And I was like, "How do you know?" She's like, "It just was, because he lived in that house for a little while when he was sick, just before he died. Like, they took him from there to the hospital, and then the hospital is where he passed. But that's where he lived." And so I just thought, okay, whatever you say, you know. But I had experiences there before that as well, like seeing a face in the window in the den. There was a four little windows on top of this really big oversized door. If you think of like what doors look like at a funeral home, this was like a door like that. It was so big. I don't know why they chose a door that was so big, but this door, and I could see a face in the window that I couldn't explain. I opened the door, which we didn't ever use this door. It was just closed off. We just, you know, and I opened the door to see if somebody there. There's nothing there. Turned on a light, nobody there. It was late at night. I'd been in the bathroom, and this vanity thing or medicine cabinet that was like mirrored, my grandmother had it. It was like a hanging on the wall instead of being recessed in the wall. So it had like, because the door's on the front and it was meant to be recessed to the wall, it had a lip of a deal. Like, and so I set lipsticks and hair ties and things on top that were mine to separate them from everybody else in the household. And it should not have been able to fly off of there without assistance. And I remember walking into the bathroom one night, and somehow it was launched at me. And I was freaked out. I've been in that same bathroom and had the door closed. These were old doorknobs that were like wrought iron, oval shaped with the skull. I don't know what you call those phone keys. You know what I'm talking about? The old style keys.
Yeah.
And it had the keyhole. So you'd have to really be looking to see anybody in the bathroom because it was so old. And these doorknobs make a screeching when you turn it because they're old. No noise, but the door comes open just enough for like maybe a small child to peek around the corner. And my mom asked me after I told her about these few, like I'm going to say two or three times this happened to me, that the door would come open and I'm using the restroom. And she would say, have you seen so-and-so? And I'm like, who are you talking about? She's like, oh, there's a little girl here that likes to play hide and go seek. That kind of freaked me out. I was like, what do you mean? She was like, you didn't see her in the bathroom? Have you seen her upstairs? Have you seen her, you know, she named all these things. I was like, oh man. I mean, this house was full of activity. Even before my parents got it, my grandmother had rented it out to a doctor, a prominent doctor from town. And his stepdaughter was in my grade in school. And she told me stories at school of things that happened upstairs, like where her lipstick and things come up missing off of her dresser. Things would move or fly, doors close. She was freaked out by it. And I don't know. I never heard any stories from my grandmother that would talk about anybody with the house before they got a hold of it. I don't know where the house came from originally, who built it or any of that, which now that we're talking about it, it really makes me want to dig, you know, and see. But it was a really big house. It's a beautiful home. I mean, I miss it to this day. It's not in our family anymore. My grandmother had to sell it as she's been ill and older, and I miss it a whole lot. You know, it has a certain draw to it, I guess. You feel connected to it, if that makes sense. And the little girl that played hide and go seek, I didn't feel threatened by her, but it was a very sinister, like, little girl, like, you know, mischievous is, I guess, the better word for it. But yeah, pretty interesting.
Now, Sarah, who was the shaman in the family?
See, and I don't really know. I know that I've gone back and done some ancestral digging because you can go to like familysearch.org and you can for free do a whole lot of digging. And I went back and found somebody named Sarah Shaw and her husband and then some other people in our family, but the family last name is Moon, M-H-O-O-N. And my grandmother, while I was digging and I told her about some things that I'd found and showed her, I mean, you can even see birth certificates, marriage and death certificates, census records there if they have it. You can see all of that. And it doesn't cost you anything to download those items and save them. And so I'd shown her some stuff and she told me, she was like, well, so-and-so was a shaman, and I don't remember the name. I know I have it written down, packed up somewhere, but she was telling me that, and I was like, oh, wow, that's really interesting because of the things that, you know, the women have in our family. And to my understanding, it's not just me and my mother. My sisters have seen some things, and it's not just us, but of course, my grandmother being Church of Christ in her later years is all I can tell you. She's not going to admit to it now, but I know that she has had some experiences. She just doesn't want to admit to it.
And you're saying that's because she is part of this Church of Christ?
Oh, yeah. They don't believe in any of that kind of stuff. And she's, they're staunch church members. And so
gotcha.
She's not going to admit to it. So
that happens quite frequently, where the rest of us, we're okay with embracing our weird, you know?
You know, I know that I believe that there's a God, and I believe that miracles do happen, they exist. But at the same time, what I see with my own eyes, and I don't have problems, I've never had any kind of eye surgery, I don't have any mental issues, I don't, you know, to be a normal person, or what they classify as a normal person, whatever that is, to see these things and have experienced these things for myself, I have to believe. What other choice do I have? I can deny it all I want to, but that's what would make me crazy. I mean, don't you think I would be crazy if I was to sit here and tell you, well, I didn't see it, but I saw it.
Even though you know you did. Yeah, it would drive you crazy. And you drive everybody else around you crazy. So that's why I think it's very good. It's very healthy for people to talk about stuff that's gone down. And it really does make me wonder if there was some blanket happening over the entire world where everyone had to sit down and write down if they had ever had any kind of quote unquote odd or strange experience, what the percentage in the whole world would be. And I think it would be astonishingly high. I just think that since we have the power of choice, most people choose to not discuss this because of the taboo nature of it all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It would be easier if I could explain it away. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
Life is so much easier if we have an answer for everything. But the unknown and the fear of the unknown is, I think, what keeps life interesting. And that's what keeps people interested in wanting to research and dig and talk about these things, you know. And I enjoy it. You know, I like going out to look for these cryptid creatures or ghosts or whatever you want to call them. If I could help people or help something from the other side, I'm open to those types of things. It doesn't bother me.
Well, no, and it makes all the difference for people to be willing to actually come on and share. And I think that really helps to prod others to say it's okay to talk about this stuff. You know, even if you don't want to do it on a show, that doesn't matter. Just talk to somebody about it. I bet, because I know from my experience, once I shared my story, it was a huge weight lifted. It just felt great to talk about it. Just to say it out loud felt good.
Do you feel like once you have, you know, explained your stories to people, that more of your friends or people that you know have come out and said, hey, you know what? I've had experiences too after the fact.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, even at my normal job, I had, you know, when I finally kind of quote unquote came out of the weird closet and people started to realize that I was doing this show. And, you know, it took me a long time even just to say, oh, yeah, I do you know, mostly what I work on the hardest is a paranormal podcast, you know, and, they're like, oh, a couple people are like, oh, that's, oh, good for you, Shannon. You know, it's kind of like one of those things. And several of them, you know, in the coming months or years, whatever it was, they would be like, you know, there was this one time this thing happened. And I'm kind of in the back of my brain going, uh-huh. And you were kind of pointing your finger and giggling at me all that those months ago or whatever it was ago. So yes, I have found that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I, you know, that friend that I told you about, his mother came and told my mom, you know, we needed to move from that place. I've had plenty of experiences where, you know, she would tell me stories of things that had happened to her that I was just like in awe. I was in shock of some of the things that she would tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like such a sadness that she passed away several years ago, really young, left behind some children and stuff. And I feel like this world has just been cheated. Such an interesting person to listen to. And what a great experience to have someone like that, that you can share those experiences with, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So we're lucky.
Yeah, that makes all the difference. Because if you're surrounded by people that are going to laugh at you, call you nuts, you're the town kook or whatever.
They do
it to all of us. And it's funny because it doesn't matter the size of the town or what kind of people. It is taboo. I don't care where you are. It's not going to be taboo to everybody. But the problem is you won't find out until you open your mouth. Therein lies the darn problem with the whole thing. So just kind of have to go, well, this is who I am. And these are the experiences I've had. I'm not saying I know what it is. I'm just saying it is friggin' weird, and I've accepted that. And I've accepted the fact that I have no damn clue what is going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Sarah, I really appreciate you coming on with me. And if you see any more chupacabras out there, you and your husband, let me know. I am really fascinated by those guys.
I wish I could get a picture, but it comes so fast.
Right.
You know, it would be so cool. But maybe I'll set up a trail camera or something.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would be so awesome.
That would be so cool. And you know what,
thank you for doing what you do, because it's awesome that there are people in this world that are still so interested that they will do the research, you know, and dig for people that are like-minded. So,
oh, thanks, Sarah. I appreciate that. Can't do it without you guys, though. I say that every single time, but I can't. Couldn't do it without you guys being willing to come on. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, you guys have a good day out there in Tejas.
We'll try. Hopefully we don't melt away.
I know, right? It needs to cool down. It's doing the same thing here. I think everybody's, 10 to 15 degrees over, and we're going, enough already. Gosh.
It's coming. We're gonna have a cold front come in the next couple of days. I say cold front's going to be like in the 80s.
Exactly. Hey. That's what we're looking forward to, our cold front, where it gets in the 80s. I can't even wait for the 80s right now. So let's hope that we all get that relief pretty soon.
When you can go swimming and not feel like you're actually sweating instead, yeah.
All right, you're swimming midair. Of course, you guys actually do have humidity there, whereas I can't really say that as much. You know, we like to say it's a dry heat out here, so.
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah, you're like, I don't feel bad for you, Shannon.
Yeah, not much.
No, It is a huge difference. Well, thanks so much, Sarah. You guys enjoy your day.
Yes, ma'am. You too. Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Shannon. So I wanted to share with you the experiences I've had regarding the canine creature I saw that has been referred to as the chupacabra. So the first time I seen this thing was in, I think it was 2013. It was in the fall. And the night that I seen the thing, I had been at a friend's house in Comanche, and I was driving home about 2 or 2:30 that night, and I was headed north on Highway 16, and I was probably maybe, I don't know, 7 or 8 miles from Desdemona when I seen this thing. The Leon River crosses the highway, and I was almost to that point when I seen what I initially thought was a coyote come out of the bushes and walk up onto the highway. It was moving just at its own pace, didn't act like it was afraid it was going to get hit or anything, and I actually had to almost stop to avoid hitting this thing. So when it walked in front of my car, I got a really good look at it as the light shined on it. It was roughly the size of a coyote, but it had no hair. Its skin was kind of a khaki brown color. It had a long, pointy tail. Its back legs were a good bit longer than the front legs, so it kind of had a hunched look to it. Had real tall, pointed ears. And its nose was very pointed as well. And its head, from the base of its ears to the point of its nose, it just kind of sloped down in a straight line before hitting the tip of its nose and turning under. When I saw it, I immediately thought, man, that's just like one of those things that I've been seeing on the internet and on pictures, you know, of people saying they found the chupacabra. You know, just like the one the lady killed in Canyon, Texas, or wherever that was. So anyway, it walked out in front of me, and then it went off the side of the highway and down and into the brush, and I went on home. I told a few people about it. They thought I was, you know, making it up, or they said I was silly, you know. And I would always tell these people, you know, I seen that thing they're calling the chupacabra, you know. I wouldn't come right out and say, oh, I saw the chupacabra. But I know what I saw. It was definitely one of those things. Whether it's the chupacabra, I don't know. But it was definitely a very odd-looking canine. I'd grown up in the country. I've been around coyotes and all sorts of dogs, and I've never seen any dog with mange or otherwise that had the shape of this creature. So the second time that I seen this thing, like Sarah was telling you, me and her were headed to Stephenville, Texas that morning. It was maybe around 10:30, and we were headed east on Highway 8 out of Desdemona. And about 3 miles out, I look over, and in this pasture, I see this animal just, you know, prowling around, sniffing. And as I got a good look at it, I realized it was another one of those animals. And I told Sarah, look, it's one of those chupacabra things. And she never really believed me when I told her about it. But she looked out there and seen it. And she was like, oh my God. And this one looked just like the first one I saw. The only difference was that its skin was more of a gray, kind of blue color. But we watched it. We never slowed down to really watch it. But we watched it as we drove by. And then that was that for that sighting. The third sighting took place last year about this time. I work in road construction. And we have a project up on Interstate 20 north of Desdemona, about 15 miles. Well, that morning, I was headed up there to pick up some equipment to take back to Stephenville. And I had picked the equipment up and was headed south on Highway 16 back towards Desdemona. And about 6 miles from the interstate, I noticed an animal come out of the brush and come up onto the road in front of another car that was ahead of me. And once again, it just came out like nothing, you know, took its time. You know, me and the car that were ahead of me didn't really have to slow down. But as we got even with it and it had passed our lane, I got a look at it as it walked down off the road and kind of turned and looked back at us. And it was the exact same kind of animal that I'd seen before. Same description, everything, only this one was that same grayish blue color. And so I called Sarah. I told her I had just seen another one. And she was like, oh, wow. And so, like I told you before, I know what a coyote looks like. I know what a dog looks like. And this thing looked like neither. All three animals that I saw looked healthy. They didn't act like they were rabid or sick in any way. You know, in fact, they acted like they were just having a good time, you know, a time of it. They were just doing their thing. But that's it for the chupacabra. I had two other experiences I wanted to share real quick, if you don't mind. The first took place in 1999, a friend and I had gone with our church group to Rising Star, Texas, to eat pizza. And it was on the way back, me and my friend were in my pickup. I was driving. It was in November, and it was very dark outside. There was no moon. And as we're driving along, I noticed this blue light come streaking across the sky at an angle, and I was in the process of telling my friend to check out that shooting star when this light just stopped in midair for about a split second and then shot straight up and disappeared. Well, I told my friend, I said, did you see that thing? And he was like, yeah, that was kind of weird. And I was like, man, that was more than weird. It made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And he was like, I don't know what it was. And so we get on back to Gorman, where our church was, and we were telling our friends about it. Of course, they thought we were playing with them, you know, giving them a hard time, making up stuff. And so that was that for that sighting. I don't know if it was a UFO, but it was definitely strange. The last thing I want to tell you about took place in 2001 when I was in the Air Force. I was stationed at F.E. Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that base has a reputation for being the second most haunted place in the state of Wyoming. It started off as a cavalry base back in the 1800s, and then the Air Force took it over and converted it into a Air Force base in the years since. But I was a member of security forces, but because I was waiting for my security clearance to come back, I was doing details around the base. Well, one morning, me and another airman, we were at the security police building, which back in the 30s was built to be the base hospital. And then eventually it was converted to a security forces building, I think in the 70s or 80s. And it has a reputation for being the most haunted building on the base. So we were there one morning and they wanted us to help take these cubicles apart. And we were to take them upstairs to the attic to a storage room. Well, the attic of the building is known for being very creepy to a lot of people. In fact, they over the years had tried to take military working dogs up there for this or that, and the dogs would freak out and piss themselves and want to leave. So anyway, we had got a key and we'd went up there to check out the room where we were going to take these things so we would know where to put them. And we unlocked the door and walked inside. And it was a big long room and it was divided in half in the middle with a wall. And the wall had a door in the center of it. The back half of the room was just open. And then the front half, they had installed chain link cages, like dog kennels in there, so that they could lock things up like to store. Well, we took a look around, figured out where we were going to place these cubicles, and then we went back downstairs and got the first batch. Well, when we returned upstairs, we could hear a siren going off on the other side of the attic door. And so we opened it up and we went in there, and behind one of the locked gates, there was a bullhorn sitting on a box, and that thing was making the siren sound. Well, we couldn't get in there because it was locked, so we dropped off the cubicle stuff, went back downstairs, told our sergeant what was going on, and he got the key. We went back up there, and he unlocked the cage and went inside, and he picked up the bullhorn and looked at it. The whole time he's messing with it, this thing is just screaming. He shakes it. He does everything he can to try to get it to shut off, and it will not. So finally, he takes the battery out. It's one of those big square batteries, and he pulls it out and sets it over to the side away from the thing and sets it back down. And when he comes back out, he said, "Man, that's weird." He said, "That thing should not make that sound unless you hold the trigger. There is no automatic function, nothing. It only works if you hold the trigger." And so me and the other guy kind of looked at him like, I don't know, you know. It was definitely weird. It was weird enough that the three of us took care of our business in there and got out, and we didn't spend much more time up there than we had to. I don't know if that was a ghost, but it was definitely weird. So that's the end of my experiences. I appreciate your time.
"Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little biography. The Buddha says forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is, is it? Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how..." how they play with this exam. By the koans to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. Same person who a little while ago left the platform. you think you are linking your moments up in the chain. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. A master will say to somebody, now get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.